This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It was spring of 1967 when Marvin Gaye recorded yet another Motown smash hit. One more hit coming out of that little house on West Grand Boulevard in Detroit. The house known as Hitsville, USA. Hitsville, USA was Motown's first headquarters until Berry Gordy moved the label to L.A. But there was a new life ahead for that little house at 2648 West Grand Boulevard. And 30 years ago this month, April 16, 1985, it became the Motown Museum, drawing visitors from all around the world. Writer Jim McFarlane is with us. His profile of the Motown Museum is in the April issue of Our Detroit magazine. Always good to have you with us and to talk with you, Jim McFarlane.
Cindy, it's always a pleasure to be with you. I'm so happy to be here.
I know. We go back a ways. I've always loved your writing, especially your music writing. And we're very happy to welcome back to Stateside Motown Museum CEO Robin Terry, who is the granddaughter of museum founder Esther Gordy Edwards. Hello again, Robin.
Well, hello. Glad to be back.
Jim, in the history of popular music, of R&B, how important is that building, is Hitsville?
It is a monument. To many people, it's like Mecca. And when I was doing rock and roll for the Detroit News for many years, whenever I would run into a British band, any band from overseas, and they knew I was from Detroit, the first thing they would ask me is about the museum. Have you been to the have you been to Hitsville? Can we go to Hitsville? How do you get to Hitsville? Well, I remember especially Sheena Easton, I interviewed years and years ago when she was actually popular. And she was, I was interviewing her at the Renaissance Center, and she was talking about getting to the Motown Museum, and she said that, like many British artists, she learned to sing, quote-unquote, American by listening to Motown music. She would emulate Mary Wells and Diana Ross, and she would try to sing like them to lose her accent. So for a lot of artists, Motown is just like a place you need to, it's a touchstone, a place you need to be and need to see.
And gratefully, it's still there to be seen, right, Robin?
It absolutely, and I would just add to that great story that, you know, we might be able to just credit the British for there being a Motown Museum, because my grandmother would often tell the story of her being there in the offices. Those were just her offices when her brother and family and the Motown Record Corporation moved to Los Angeles. She just convinced her brother that there needed to be a Detroit presence for Motown, and she wanted to maintain that. And at that time, she had been the family historian, the company historian, so she had just collected things. But people would come to Hitsville just wanting to peek into Studio A to see where all of that great Motown music was made. And she said one day she looked out of the window and it looked like the entire British Navy was on the front lawn. And that was the day she called her brother and said, I think we made history and didn't know it. And it was from that point forward that she really committed herself to creating a museum so that people could come from all over the world to see the beginnings of that Motown story.
You know, when I think, Jim, that that second Motown headquarters was that office building
right,
on Woodward. Yeah, just north of the Fox Theater that sat derelict for years before it was torn down and that big hole was left. And I wondered, how close do you think we came to having that same fate befall that little house were it not for Esther Gordy Edwards?
Yeah, were it not for her, I don't know. But thank God for her and for the foresight that she had, not only to preserve that house, but that vast collection that today tells the story of what happened in that house.
And as I told Robin when we met for this interview, I had a chance to know her grandmother, an honor for me. And she was such a kind and gentle lady. She was such a lady in every sense of the word. But she was she was a family historian. She was the family conscience. She was a family. I mean, it would not be there, I'm convinced, if it had not been for her, because she saw the need to preserve a memory. She saw a need to have a place where people could come, no more so than when the Motown the Musical opened here in Detroit recently, and got everybody who had a Motown connection just flocking. They had a place to go. You know,
exactly.
Had the museum not been there, where would they have met?
Well, you know, there's that, like when you go to Memphis and you see what should have been the home of Stax, and it's a lot. You know, it's just there's a plaque, and that's all there's there. And then there's the museum they build after, but it's just not the same. It is not the same.
And that's the beauty of it, is that it really is the only place on this planet that you can go to studio, that you can go to and literally stand in the footsteps of those musical icons. Mm-hmm. It's the only place that you can do that. And so, you know, we're very grateful that that building has continued to be there and continued to serve as a beacon in the community and for the music community, because you're absolutely right. It didn't have to be standing today.
You know, Jim, there have been some very, very big boosts through the years for Hitsville, starting right out of the gate after it became a museum. And Michael Jackson was one of the first to jump in and help, wasn't he?
He was.
Absolutely. Yes, he was. I mean, even today we have his fedora hat and his jeweled glove that he presented to the museum. That was back in 1988, along with a significant contribution at the time.
And did that kind of jumpstart other contributions, Robin? Did other people come to rally after that?
I think it did. There's always room for more.
Don't hold back.
But it certainly just raised the awareness of the museum, not only among the artist community, but, you know, communities in general. Once Michael Jackson comes to your front door and does something, people take notice.
And, of course, in fact, Robin, you were on stateside as we talked about Sir Paul McCartney, who didn't want to play his show in Detroit at Comerica Park until he had gone over, paid homage at Hitsville and seen the decrepit piano. And I know we talked to you about how he paid to have it rehabbed, fixed up, did a benefit concert and shipped it back to you. And Jim, how significant was it for the Henry Ford to become involved?
Oh, I think it's very important. You know, we have great museums in this city, and the fact that they tend to interact and help each other out, I think is very significant. I think any tourist, any visitor who comes to Detroit, and you should come to Detroit, visitors and tourists, because it's a great city. There are places, it's the DIA, it's the Henry Ford, it's the Motown Museum. You could make a day just seeping yourself in the art and the history of the city. And I think that when there's a cooperative effort, it just helps to raise the level. All the boats rise up because of that.
Robin, when you walk through the doors of Hitsville these days, what do people see?
The first thing is that you're greeted, you know, by some very talented docent who then begins to take you through this incredible journey that is Motown. So you get up close and personal to not only the story of the Gordy family and sort of where that whole entrepreneurial spirit that Berry Gordy had, where that was seated. You learn about his story, and then you venture into the story of these young, talented people who were from Detroit, and most people don't know that, like, most of the Motown artists came from within a 5-mile radius of the Hitsville house. So they came right out of the neighborhoods, right out of the churches, and made their way to this little house on the boulevard where, you know, this new kind of music was being made.
And it was being made around the clock, wasn't it?
It was being made 24 hours a day. So you follow that journey, and then, you know, the icing on the cake is that you literally step back in time to 1959, 1960s in Berry Gordy's apartment and then in the early Motown offices, and everything's been restored to its original condition, and then ultimately make your way into Studio A, which is the highlight.
If I may just jump on that to echo Robin's earlier point, I took the tour as just a visitor because I wanted to see what the experience was like. And it's so cool because when you get to certain places, they'll go, well, if you stand here, this is where Berry Gordy stood. If you sing here, Smokey Robinson probably sang on that microphone and he played on this piano. So they really put you in the footsteps of the artist as you go through the tour. And you must be prepared to sing. Because they make you sing. And the funny thing is, no one has to wonder what the lyrics are. No one goes, well, how's that song go? They say, sing Baby Love. Everybody's right there.
Yes.
They're on point. You know, so
yeah. Star for a day in Studio A because, you know, Motown Museum, like Motown, there's nothing traditional about it. We sing, we dance, we clap. I mean, it's an experience.
I was surprised to see in your piece, In Our Detroit, Jim McFarland, more than 75% of the visitors are tourists. So they're coming from elsewhere. Is it just kind of that locals don't think to go?
I think it's the hero in your homeland kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're proud to have it here. We there's a certain swelling of local pride to know that the Motown, I mean, we created this sound and here's the museum. But people don't tend to, you know, I hate to tell out of school stories, but one of the tour guides told me that she lived in Detroit and she ran up and down West Grand Boulevard for years until she got the job. She'd never been in the museum. That's not atypical. We know it's there. Mm-hmm. We're proud that it's there. We love that it's there, but we don't go in to actually see it. And that's a shame because it's so much better. I remember it from my rock and roll years back in the 80s. I remember it, and to see it now, it's just it's light years beyond what it was before.
So
it truly is a museum.
If you went back in the early days, it's worth coming back and seeing what it's grown into.
Yes, it's not even close to what it was in its early years. It's really it's an experience, and one that if you love music at all, any kind of music, I think you owe it to yourself to express that experience.
Robin, I know you've been a part of the museum since you were a docent when you were in high school, and now you're the CEO. What is your vision for the Motown Museum in the future?
Motown Museum, to me, has to return to what it was and what it represented in the Detroit community when it was at its heyday. And so what does that mean? Do we want to start recording music? No. But it had a magnetic effect in the community for those who were creative and wanted to make music. And I think it's important in terms of our programming that we continue to foster creativity in the Detroit community and abroad, and to continue to be a place where creative people can gather to not only make music, but to just be creative, be innovative. One of the programs that we have, which runs for the entire month of April, is called Motown Mic, and it's a spoken word series. And it's really a tribute to Motown's Black Forum label, and many people don't know that Motown had a spoken word label where greats like Dr. Martin Luther King, Langston Hughes, Stokely Carmichael, Elaine Brown, all recorded on this particular label. So we started a series called Motown Mic every Friday night from 8 to 10. Poets from the Detroit area come and compete and do their own pieces. And then in June, we have a big finale with the top 10 contestants. Creating more programming like that to give Detroiters a reason to come back to Hitsville and to continue to create and build on that phenomenal legacy that exists there, that's really what the future of the museum has to be about.
And it's worth mentioning, and I bet this kind of came out of the relationship with the Henry Ford because they do this. There's a membership card now?
Yes. Again, it goes back to community. So we're celebrating 30 years, and as we approach the 30 years, we said, you know what? We really need to find creative ways to reconnect not just with our global fans, but our Detroiters in particular. And so this membership program is just that. It's an opportunity for your average hardworking person, whoever it is, it doesn't matter what your station is in life, but for you to engage with this legacy, engage with this important history, and sort of establish your ownership in it, be a part of it. We started, there's a campaign that you're going to hear about over the next several months as we launch the membership program called I Am Motown. And the idea is that we have people all over this globe who make their way to Hitsville. All of them feel the same kind of ownership. You know, Motown music played some important role in their lives. They claim that they are Motown. I am Motown. And they can say that with great pride. So this campaign is really to encourage people wherever they are to just take that ownership and join us and become a part of the support of this and preservation of this legacy.
Jim, have you heard from folks that you didn't expect to once your story hit out there? And
I always do. It's always gratifying. You know, I'm honored to work for that publication. Our Detroit has been very good to me over the years. I've survived six editors, I think, over my time there. And it's always nice because, like Robin suggests, you mention the Motown name and people get nostalgic and they want to talk about it and they want to talk about their relationship to it. You know, Barry designed that music. He produced it in such a way that it was meant to be heard in car speakers. He thought about people in that era driving up and down Woodward Avenue, listening to his music, and he wanted to make sure it sounded best coming out of those little cheap Ford card speakers. And he did that. And so a lot of people have memories of cruising, the romance, first dates, you know, that music brings back a whole lot of memories because it was in a specific time and place. And whenever you mention the Motown sound and the Motown Museum, people want to call and just wax nostalgic about it.
All right. Lightning round. Final question. Jim McFarlane, your very favorite Motown song.
Oh, Heard It Through the Grapevine. Either version, but of course Marvin's is best.
Robin?
Probably the anthem, Martha Reeves. calling out around the world, are you ready for a brand new beat?
Robin Terry is the CEO of the Motown Museum, and you can get lots more information about visiting the Motown Museum and also the 30th anniversary celebrations. Just go to motownmuseum.org. And Jim McFarland's story, Not the Same Old Song, is in the April issue of Our Detroit Magazine. Thanks so much to both of you for joining us on Stateside.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Support for arts and culture coverage on Stateside comes in part from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs and the National Endowment for the Arts.